To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Is the Ken Carmen Show on CBS Sports Radio.
And we are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Oh, my goodness gracious, friends. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, remember, Rocket can. It's Ken Carmen on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Send the tweets, send the hot takes at Ken Carmen, C-A-R-M-A-N. Lots of different opinions coming in from the knockdown dragout that I just had with Pierno. I didn't even mean to have it, but it happened. About Patrick Ewing, Joe in Oregon, who I have to email back. He said I was right. You're right on small town and big town figures. Totally right, thank you very much. I had one person say I was wrong. Matt said he totally agreed with me. Everybody or the majority in New York should know who Ewing is. I didn't mean to get into it, and I want to save it again until 1 o'clock Eastern. John Machado will join us. The Athletic in Dallas, coming up at 11:40 a.m. Eastern. Obviously, we're going to be talking about Dak Prescott. Not a whole lot of Mark Cuban or anything else. Right now, we welcome in Anthony Pierno again. Hello, Pierno.
Hello, Kenny.
What'd you think of the picture I sent you?
That's some pretty good stuff right there. So you said a field trip to New York City, huh?
This is a photo, and it's at my Twitter account, at Ken Carmen.
One thing is that really caught my attention right away. I'm like, what?
Yes.
Why are these kids wearing Yankee hats from from Cleveland?
This is the
year 2000.
Okay.
You've had great baseball teams throughout the 90s.
You had
a couple playoff battles there with the Yankees, one that you won and one that you lost.
Of course, in
98. So, I mean, what's going on with Yankee hats?
Hold on. Okay, I'll tell you what.
Front runners over here.
I wasn't wearing a Yankee hat.
Are you wearing? I can't tell. Like, you fat head back there. I can't see if you're wearing a hat.
It's not that fat. I wasn't that fat yet. I was in ninth grade, for crying out loud.
How much did you weigh back then? Probably.
I mean, I was heavy, but I wasn't what I am now. All right. Let me tell you about this. Now, this was a photo from our school trip to New York City, our class trip in 2000. This is Edison Junior High, right? Now, I'm going to explain the Yankees hats because you don't remember. We're the same age. You don't remember.
I don't remember what.
What TV show did kids come home and watch after school in the late 90s and early 2000s?
What TV show, late 90s, early 2000s?
Did we watch right after school?
Was it baseball?
No.
Late 90s.
Late 90s, early 2000s, did American kids of middle school, junior high age, even high school, come home and watch after school every day? TV show?
You have to tell me this.
Carson Daly, Total Request Live. You didn't watch TRL?
I did. I mean,
okay.
All right.
So again, let me point this out to you. What was a big band or a big musical act of the late 90s and early 2000s and was impressionable with children, especially young males, age 11 to 18.
I don't know. There were a lot of groups.
Little group called Limp Bizkit.
Oh,
do we
Fred
or do we not remember? There you go.
His red Yankees
there
hat.
There you go. There
God,
you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
God. But so you guys
see,
are,
you're from Staten Island.
You wanted to be Fred Durst.
I didn't want to be Fred Durst. It says it right here. Okay, you're from Staten Island, so I'm sure a lot of people who are from New York rolled their eyes when they saw Fred Durst. We're from Ohio, man. All right. We're going to the big city. For me, it was the first time in my life. The first time I'm going to go to the Big Apple. I get to see it all. Crank up the Sinatra, except that back then it was crank up the Fred Durst. We bought bootleg CDs. I got, you want to know the three CDs I got bootlegged?
Yeah.
I got Wu-Tang Clan.
So this was your hip-hop phase that you went through.
Oh, I mean, yeah, but once you have... Yeah, but if you start to hear, like, if I hear Cream by Wu-Tang Clan now, I'm still going to bob my head and start to do the lyrics, aren't I?
But you were really into it. I mean,
like, if I hear Triumph, we're going to bomb atomically. Like, this is what we're going to do.
I mean, I love the hand gesture. I mean, really gangster here.
I know, that was, yeah.
Really
gangster. I didn't do this for a bunch of respect. I did this on purpose. But you got to understand is that kids from the Midwest are coming to New York for the first time. Can I tell you the other two CDs I got bootleg?
Yeah, please.
Jay-Z, The Dynasty, which I have that album on my Spotify now. That's how much I love that album, how much I love Jay-Z. And RKellyTP2.com.
Ooh, R. Kelly.
Which, yeah, no, you can't really.
Nah, yeah.
You know.
Can't say that nowadays.
Yeah, but
That you bought an R. Kelly CD.
Yeah. Well, you know, those were different times.
Hey, man, I went through my hip hop phase as well. I wore some velour suits. I got to find pictures of those because I know they are laying around. So I could find them.
It started with Bone Thugs, and it's always stayed with Bone Thugs. But there was
this
a,
was
there
right
was
around
a...
the same time too. Yeah. I remember that Christmas, Eminem and DMX and Dr. Dre and. Method Man and Red Man. So
see,
yeah, I went through my phase as well.
Tom DeCelestino is listening. Hopefully I got that right off the top. He said TRL, Limp Bizkit. See, you don't know. You're too close.
You
you're in the system in New York. We were out in the country. We're out in the Midwest, Pierno. So Limp Bizkit meant, as sad as this is, had a great deal of influence on us at that age. And so, yeah, we wanted to break stuff. We wanted to do it all for the – I don't know if I can finish that sentence
the
on the radio.
The
okay.
Nookie?
We wanted to do it all for the Nookie. It was all Fred Durst and backwards hats. And then immediately Eminem came in, made fun of Fred Durst, and we never wanted to hear from him again.
Exactly.
Thank God for Eminem.
Did you? Were your jeans half off your ass in this? You know?
No. I still never wore the jeans half off my ass because my ass was too big.
Is it me or the kid in the blue looks like J.J. Watt a little bit? I don't know why.
Which kid in the blue looks like J.J. Watt?
In light blue in the front. I don't know why. I don't know why I thought that. I don't know. For some
no,
reason,
that's
I don't
Jeff
know
Nicholas. He was a really good baseball player. He has like 18 kids now. He's happily married. He and his wife are great. They just have a million children, I believe.
Listen, it still doesn't excuse. I mean, come on. I mean, kids from Cleveland wearing Yankee hats. But
listen, you're a sports guy. It doesn't have to make sense. We were 12 years old. We were 12 years old. It doesn't make sense.
Did you talk to any of these kids still?
Through Facebook, yeah.
Okay.
Through Facebook, I still talk to there's Steve Zanger in the background and Josh Stacy behind him and Chris Delikney next to him, and I still talk to those guys. Yeah. Good time.
What was the weirdest field trip you ever went on in school?
Probably that one.
That one?
Oh, yeah, we did some weird stuff. We're in New York, so we thought, like, anything goes. So we got a – like, we brought Pop, right? Like, we brought Surge, and we took the 12-pack box, and we got a big Sharpie, and we wrote Show Your Bleeps on
so
the
So where'd you wind up going? Where'd you go
they
in
wouldn't
New York?
Let us. They wouldn't let us, like, out of Manhattan, which sucked. There was one bus that got to go – like, we got real New York tour guides, right? And one guy –
So, but what was the point of coming to this? What, you went to like
to see New York City.
I know.
That's
but,
what you do, yeah.
So you just hit up all the big landmarks? Okay.
Yeah. Which was great because the year before we went to D.C. And it was just nonstop. You got to see this. You got to see that. You got to see this. You got to see that. You got to see Mount Vernon. You got to see the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. You have to see this monument and that monument and this monument and that monument. It was like they let us kind of hang out a little bit in New York, and that was fun. That was a lot of fun. But we got the sign. I never will forget this. We got the sign. We wrote, "Show your bleeps," and we pressed it against the bus window as we were circling MSG. And because they wouldn't let us in MSG for whatever reason, but we could circle MSG. And we were going around MSG, and someone saw it and made a couple of very obscene gestures to us. We had a teacher who saw the sign. She was appalled.
Again, show your bleeps.
This was 2000. These were different times for all of us.
Caused a lot of havoc back in the day at the back on the back of the bus.
Carlin Prescott, did you watch Charmed? Did you have a boy band phase? No, I did not have a boy band phase.
We all love the boy bands.
Nope. I was Korn. It was Jonathan Davis. It was Tool. Dude, I was a hard ass.
Backstreet
Boy. No idea.
Yeah. Big nope. Hard ass. Ken Carmen.
Nope.
Yeah,
it was King Hard ass.
Could really tell. Big Hard ass.
I was here
ass.
To wreck your bleep big anytime you came ass. Around the neighborhood.
Come on. Love it. Love me. Time. Love me some Backstreet Boys and Sync.
So what you got for top five?
Top five. So Coming to America, of course, is out now. So
ooh, yeah.
We're doing the top five favorite sequels.
I was going to ask. My son's five, real quick. I want to watch Coming to America, and I don't really care if my son's there. Is that bad? The original Coming to America.
The original Coming to America. You're going to watch it uncensored.
I saw Major League uncensored when I was 5 years old. And I think I'm normal. There's a lot of people who think I'm actually quite twisted.
I saw a lot of things, too, when I was younger that might be questionable. But, I mean, I turned out, I think, okay. So
okay. I
used to play like violent video games and everything. I used to play Grand Theft Auto, and I used to love to run the people over. And
if Axel grows up to be a scumbag, it's not going to be because of Coming to America. It might be because of me. I might be
an unfit parent,
but it's not going to be because he saw Coming to America when he was 5 years old.
No,
right?
Movies, music, okay. Videos. No, that's no excuse. That's no
man,
excuse.
This is going to be good. Top five. I got one in there that's going to get people really upset with me, and I'm not going to do it on purpose. I actually really truly love the movie.
Well, because you just have bad taste. That's why.
Well, you know, we're not all Roger Ebert like you are, buddy. Yeah, there's got to be a Gene Siskel to a Roger Ebert, even though weight-wise I would be the Roger Ebert. But either way.
Gene Siskel was great, too. So
we'll talk to you coming up in 20 minutes, okay? Fantastic stuff. The great Anthony Pierno. 855-212-4CBS. I want everybody to come over to the dark side. I hate replay. I hate replay not just in college basketball that a lot of people are starting to notice because they're watching the conference tournament games because they want to put a few dollars down on teams so they start to watch college basketball when the conference tournament comes around. And people are starting to notice that the final minute of basketball, because of replay, is becoming interminable. Jay Billis has been on this, and I've been lukewarm on Jay Billis at best for a long time about paying the players and everything, but he's right about that. You go back to last week. It was Iowa, Wisconsin, the final minute of in regulation. According to Anthony Lima, who was hosting this show for me last week, he timed it. It took 11 minutes. 11 minutes inside of 1 minute of regulation basketball because of replay. We talked about this earlier this week. He has come to the dark side. I think that replay's bad for sports. And it's not just a hot take, and thank goodness a man who is as well-written and as good of an author as John Feinstein absolutely agrees. Hit it.
I have always had mixed emotions about replay in all sports. When it first came in, it was supposed to correct egregious errors. You know, like in football where somebody clearly had a foot out of bounds and the official missed it. And, for example, or when somebody, clearly had his foot on the 3-point line and the officials missed it, whatever it might be. But now it's taken over the games, not just college basketball, which is what I wrote about in the Post this week, but the NFL, baseball, hockey, it's not as bad. For some reason, maybe it's camera placement. Maybe it's because there aren't as many calls where you need to go to replay. They seem to get it done faster. But it's taken over the games. And what's happened, and part of what's happened, in my opinion, is the officials don't go looking for an egregious error. They go looking for the correct call. Now, to some extent, you say, okay, that's good. But if you make a call on the floor and you can't figure out that it was wrong within 60 seconds, 90 seconds, you pick your time period, then the call on the floor should stand.
Feinstein has joined. Maybe he started, but he still joined the dark side. I ask you to come with me. Now, I know it's never going to go away. It's not going to go away. We have sponsorship for these things now. It brings drama to the telecast. There are people whose job it is to go over these. Dean Blandino, Mike Pereira, some of those guys. I know it's not going away. But I have to find a way to reel this thing in. Because college basketball, of the things they don't need the games to go too long. The NFL, of things that the NFL doesn't need, that doesn't need a crisis of confidence within the fan bases. Because I'll tell you what, my life as a fan, I'm willing to say it, my life as a fan of football, your favorite team, my favorite team, doesn't matter. My life was easier when there was no replay. I knew I was going to get screwed over at some point. I knew the other team was going to get jobbed at some point. I learned to live with it. That's what it was. Chuck Knoll, the late, great Chuck Knoll, was the one who said it best years ago. He called all of this. You will start to look for the wrong things. You will start to look to, instead of correcting egregious error, you will start to look to just get something right. And some people say, that's fine. That's fair. That's what it's supposed to be done. Since when have we cared, honestly, since when have we cared that sports, the ones that we pay attention to, not our kids and not high school and stuff, but the big-time college sports that we're just fans of that are fantasy or professional sports that we just live in our fantasy world for entertainment. Since when the hell do we care if anything's fair? Since when? I believe it in every single season. There will be a point where a call will go your way, take it and run. You know you put the boots to the other team. You know it's not fair. Shut up, take it, and run. The same thing when it happens to you. You're going to have to take it, we're going to have to deal with it, and we're going to have to move on. Replay has made it much worse and a much less enjoyable experience. When they go under the hood, it takes time. It diverts my attention. There can be drama if I'm really in on the game. If I'm a fan of either one of those teams, that's fine. But the observation of it, it kills it. And half the time, it feels like they don't get it right in the first place. John Feinstein does have an answer for it. I love John Feinstein's answer for it. Here's that.
Replay's not going away, but it's not that hard to make it less invasive. And the rules committee should, when they meet in May, they should simply say, okay, here's the deal. If officials decide to go to the table, they've got 60 seconds, 75 seconds, whatever they decide. To me, the less the better. And if you can't see an angle in that time that shows the call on the floor is wrong, the call on the floor stands. It's not that hard. And I would do the same thing with football and baseball. You got to see an angle within a minute. Of course, in baseball, and football, they got people in New York looking at it. But if you can't see something quickly to show, oh, the call was wrong. I mean, it's ridiculous when in the NFL when they have to replay any touchdown. You know, the guy's clearly 2 yards into the end zone. Oh well, we got to go to replay here and wait a minute before the extra point. It's ridiculous.
Totally agree. I know it can't go away. Your objective should be to simplify it. Simplify it and streamline it and move it on. Our attention spans are quicker than they've ever been. We listen to as little as we've ever listened to. We've paid attention to as little as we've ever paid attention to. It's not going to get any better anytime soon. While there's some argument to fairness, while people claim they want fairness, I don't think they actually care, and I think it makes for a worse product overall. 855-212-4CBS. John Machado going to join us at 11:40 a.m. Eastern. Up next, top five sequels. Thanks to Pierno. It's Ken Carmen.
This is the Ken Carmen Show on CBS Sports Radio.
John Machado going to join us from The Athletic in Dallas. Coming up at 11:40 a.m. Eastern. It is time for the top five sequels of all time. Thanks to Anthony Pierno. Does a great job with the top five. Pierno, you ready to roll? Let's go, baby.
All right, let's go. So number five for me, going with Spider-Man 2, Sam Raimi, Tobey Maguire back in 04. As much as I love the MCU, you could still make an argument that this is the greatest comic book movie ever still. Great mix. You got action, comedy, drama. You still have all the comic book elements in this one. The emotional stakes are higher compared to the original. You can relate to Peter's struggles in this one. He's juggling school and work with his personal and social life. He's dealing with some past demons, the death of Uncle Ben in the original. He's struggling to pay the rent. Mary Jane's getting engaged. His best friend wants to kill Spider-Man. So, and then also you have the film asking a very powerful question. And that is, what if Spider-Man doesn't want his powers? And we see Peter have to deal with that. The special effects were excellent at the time. Alfred Molina, who played the villain Doc Ock, is excellent. The character was very entertaining and complex. So Spider-Man 2, number five for me. Number four, Aliens from 1986. One of the great sequels of all time. You know, most sequels, they fail because they just take the elements from the first movie and just do more of this of the same in the second one. But Aliens takes some of the recognizable elements from the original and does something entirely different with them. We see a character growth from Sigourney Weaver's character Ripley, which she was nominated for an Academy Award, Sigourney Weaver, for a performance. So you have, again, someone that shows a lot of growth, goes from losing everything, including her daughter. No one believes her about the aliens, and then she ultimately decides to go back and confront the creatures, and she finds an orphan, a Newt, and she has to protect her from the alien queen. She really becomes a warrior and has a daughter again. She winds up with a whole new family at the end. So a great arc here for Ripley's Ripley, the character in the film. So Aliens number two, number four for me. It's a great sequel. Just absolute thriller, action-packed from the beginning to the end, just bigger and better than the original. Number three for me, Toy Story 2. I'm Mr. Pixar. I love my animation, including all the Pixar films, but this is Pixar at its best. Obviously, kids will like it, but has that emotional aspect for the adults. Woody has to deal with some difficult truths. He's forced to contemplate a future where he doesn't belong to a kid. Kid has to imagine what that future looks like. It's kind of a role reversal from the first one. The first one's about Buzz finding himself, coming to grips with not being a real space ranger. And then the second film, Woody learns about his history and has to make some difficult decisions. We're introduced to the character of Jesse, and this is where Pixar really likes to tug at the heartstrings. This is one of the early examples of that, when Jesse recalls being abandoned by her child, and we get Jesse's When Somebody Loved Me song, that one of the most emotional moments, not only in animation history, I would say all film history, just not animation history. What happened?
I fast forward through that part.
You fast forward through Jesse's When Somebody Loved Me song?
I ain't interested in that.
Well, you have a black heart. That's what you have. You have an absolute
black heart.
That's sad.
That's too sad. I don't want to deal
with
it.
Yeah, I mean, it's very deep.
Damn, you black heart,
Kid Carmen. It's very deep. It's emotional. So, but the film is also very funny. The storytelling is excellent. There's great action there in the second one. Also, you'll notice a big advancement in terms of the animation from the original. So, Toy Story 2 at number 3. At number 2, T2, Judgment Day, Terminator 2, one of the best action movies of all time, without a doubt. And I think what sets this one apart from the original is, like, the first one I feel like is a horror film almost. The second one has a lot of heart to it, and that's because the relationship with the characters, the relationship between John and the Terminator, which is fun to watch that relationship develop, of course, over the course of the film. You know, the relationship between John John and his mother, Sarah, and then, of course, the three of them. You know, you have John, Sarah, and the Terminator all form a family. So the relationships are a big part of it. And it's cool. We get to see Arnold's Terminator turn into the good guy. Sarah Connor, she's a badass in this one and the second one. Robert Patrick as T-1000, he did a great job in this. The special effects were groundbreaking back in 1991. Just every aspect of the sequel was a step up from the original. And I don't know about you, but that nuclear explosion scene, that still gives me chills to this day. So great job by James Cameron. And then number one, if you know me, you know where I'm going with this. Come on, The Godfather Part Two, 11 Academy Award nominations. It won 6 times, including Best Picture, first sequel ever to win the Oscar for the Best Picture. And then, of course, another great performance from Al Pacino. The key, of course, was the flashback scenes. And we get to see the young Vito Corleone played magnificently by Rob De Niro. And, of course, the flashbacks are great because they just give context to the Corleone family and gives us a better understanding of these characters and the world that they're in. And when we did the top 5 70s movies, I talked about my love for John Cazale, and of course, because he was in The Deer Hunter. So
Some people say it Cazale. Is it Cazale or Cazale?
I always say Cazale.
Okay.
But one of my favorite scenes in the movie and his is the scene with him and Michael in the lake house when Fredo goes off on his younger brother because he felt that he was stepped over. And just it's a great monologue, and it's beautifully delivered. Just his body language, his voice cracks when he yells, "I'm smart." The visual is amazing. You know, Michael standing up and then Fredo slunk back in that chair. Just a great scene. So The Godfather Part 2, my number one sequel.
All right, you ready to hate me?
Go at it.
Here we go. I should start doing these first and you should do them second because yours are way more thorough than mine. Number 5, I don't care. Double birds to all of you people. Major League 2. I know it's got a 5% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't give a damn. I think there's funny parts of that movie. The part where Charlie Sheen has to do the right guard ad over and over and over again, I still laugh about that. Yeah, they make Serrano, he's a pacifist and all that stuff. I still like Major League 2, I don't care, all right? It's my personal list, it's what I like, and I like Major League 2. Number 4, I fought this, I wanted to put Home Alone 2, but they didn't even make it. Number 4, Color of Money, the sequel of The Hustler.
That's a good one.
Okay, Color of Money. But anything Paul Newman does, like Paul Newman could come back from the dead and fart in my dinner, and I'd still like Paul Newman. I love Paul Newman. Always have, always will. That part where Tom Cruise, like, gets involved in the character and, like, what do you do? Like, play pool for, like, 11 weeks straight to try to be cognizant of playing billiards and being a really good billiard player. Love that movie. That's number 4. Number 3, this is where you're going to start really hating me. Number 3 is Batman Returns. Michelle Pfeiffer, Michael Keaton, Danny DeVito as the Penguin. That's my number 3. Number 2, we go back-to-back with technically the Batman series, but different franchises, The Dark Knight. I watched that movie again, what was it, last week while I was out? And I still love it. I watched that
in theaters.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I love it too, but I hate to say that, but in my opinion, it's a little bit overrated.
Really?
Yeah, I like it. Again, it's a good movie, but again, you know what stands out is the performance of Heath Ledger.
Exactly.
And I think his performance makes it in a lot of people's eyes better than
because because remember, there were people who were critical of Heath Ledger before that performance and said like, you know, he's just a good-looking guy, this, that, and the other. And then he turns in that performance, and then he dies, sadly, and you're left wondering, you're like, holy God, did we miss on the next Daniel Day-Lewis here?
Well, I mean, people clearly didn't watch any of his previous movies, because I don't know why you would have that thought.
There was criticism. You remember that. You remember it. You know film way better than I do. There was criticism of him. That's my number 2. Number 1, Godfather Part 2, for all the reasons you just said, and also where it shows the real talent of Francis Ford Coppola, where he didn't even really want to do Part 2, and they basically like, listen, man, you got to do it. It's going to make a lot of money. We got to do this. and it turns in that type of movie for all the reasons you said, where, gosh, you just find out just how bad Michael Corleone is and how just, oh, he goes from a war vet to just awful, just the worst embodiment of evil that you can find when you have your own brother killed, which is something, I know, John Cazale wanted to get him, or Cazale, sorry, Fredo wanted the top, he wanted the power, but man, to talk him into that, and then to have somebody else kill your brother on a fishing trip. Sorry, spoiler alert. Ugly business. But still, it's my number one. Those are great. You did really good there, Pierno. You always do good with movies.
Yeah, I always do good.
Fantastic, as always. Coming up in just over an hour, the wonderful, wonderful Andy Gresh, WEEI Boston. Yeah, I mean that, WEEI Boston. He's taking over. It's going to be fantastic. We're going to love him. We're going to talk Boston sports with him. And, of course, what Gresh is doing. Up next, John Machado going to join us from The Athletic in Dallas. Who else are we talking about? It's Dak Prescott and whether or not they're going to be in the Super Bowl over the course of that contract.
This is the Ken Carmen Show on CBS Sports Radio.
1 hour from now, Andy Gresh, WEEI Boston. And whether or not that this is part of the legacies coming up of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, because there's got to be some cruel, weird irony that on the same day that Tom Brady, after winning a Super Bowl, signs an extension, that Bill Belichick re-signs Cam Newton to a one-year deal. 855-212-4CBS. Also, work or shoot coming up in just over 40 minutes. Let's go to the hotline. We welcome in John Machado, Cowboys reporter for The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter at John Machado, who joins us on the show right now. John, answer me. Are the Cowboys going to be in a Super Bowl at any point during this contract of Dak Prescott?
Wow, that's bold. I guess if I had to, you know, if I was betting my own money on it, I'd say no. I mean, the odds are against them. And it's not even really about Dak. I'm going to take Dak out of the equation and just take the franchise over the last 25 years, not even getting to an NFC championship game. So, obviously, when you sign a contract like this, as the Cowboys quarterback being the richest player in the franchise's history, you know, you're going to obviously look immediately back at Roger Staubach. You're going to look back at Troy Aikman, and those guys won Super Bowls. And so I know that that's going to be the bar set for Dak, but I think he can get his value out of this contract without having them win a Super Bowl, just because this is a team that over the last decade has not had a defense that anybody would think would get them to a Super Bowl. So if they get and build that defense around him as well, then yeah, I think they have the capabilities to. But right now it's, you know, they're the best team in the NFC East on paper. They should continue to be that way, especially with what they have at the quarterback position. But I don't think that this deal guarantees any type of Super Bowl run or anything like that.
John Machado joining us on the show. And see, that's the reason I asked you the question, because I think there's so many people going, well, they're not going to win the Super Bowl. What's the point of paying them? I go, are you nuts? What's the point of not paying them? You put this whole team together. Now, you overpaid Zeke Elliott, but I can't take the contract away from him now. You've invested a lot in wide receiver. Can't take the contract away from those. What else are you supposed to do? You're supposed to let the quarterback go, then find another one? I didn't understand a lot of sports talk radio throughout this week, not outside of Dallas, like the national stuff outside in other cities where, what did you want him to do? Did you want him to find somebody else? Dak Prescott is a really good quarterback and can get them back to the playoffs. Super Bowls aren't guaranteed. I can't guarantee another one for Tom Brady, let alone Dak Prescott.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is you just got to look at the market. You know, it's supply and demand and what's out there. This is finding a franchise quarterback in the NFL, which Dak Prescott clearly is. I personally think he's a top 10 quarterback in the league. I don't know how his harshest critic could say he's not at worst, you know, somewhere between 10 to 16. And to have anybody that's a franchise quarterback, you're going to be paying top dollar for it. That's just the way it is, because there's just not enough of them out there. This isn't like the NBA and saying, hey, go get me a scorer, somebody that can just score the ball. Like, okay, you're going to find that in the NBA. There's tons of guys that can do that. You can't find a ton of guys that can play quarterback in the NFL. It's probably going to be hard for you even to find half the teams to have a realistic starter. And then the other half are basically every year looking for a new starting quarterback, and they're not getting anywhere close to winning a Super Bowl. And so that's where they would have been. If they wouldn't have gotten Dak signed, then it's sitting there, and then you've got to consider taking a quarterback this year in the draft, which they have the 10th overall pick. And if you're sitting there at 10, all the good ones, the top three or four, will probably be gone by then. So then what do you do? Then you're trying to hope for a Matthew Stafford type situation, or you're trying to hope for the Tom Brady situation where he reaches free agency or something like that. I mean, there's hope doesn't make a lot of sense there. So, and then here's the other side of it for me. Like, so if they don't give him that contract and he goes, let's say that they were like, we're ready to move on right now. We're done with this. We're not even going to franchise tag you again. You can go out in the open market. It's laughable to think that he wouldn't have gotten more than he got from the Cowboys on the open market. I think he gets 43, maybe even more than that, $43 million per season, maybe even more than that if he gets free agency this year, just because of how many teams need a quarterback and what those teams would be willing to pay.
This is great stuff from John Machado right now. It's not just because I agree with everything he's saying. He joins us from The Athletic in Dallas. Is there buyer's remorse on Zeke Elliott? Let me take that another step further.
Oh, I would think for a little. Yeah, there has to be. I mean, they made him the highest paid running back in the league, and he hasn't performed like that the last 2 years. So, yeah, of course. That's the thing. When you pay a guy, that type of money, making the highest paid at his position like that, the expectations are extremely high. And the reason they got that deal done before the Dak one is also because they felt like for Dak to have ultimate success, he was going to need a strong running game. And that's what got the job done in Dak's first few years in the league, was having that strong running game. Well, it also didn't help Ezekiel Elliott that this past year, three of their top offensive linemen, if not missed the entire season, missed most of the season because of injuries. And so that's never a good thing for a running game. But there's got to be a little bit just because, the landscape's there. We all see it. And even at the time when he signed the contract, this was a storyline. But, history shows, he really shouldn't be paying running backs, And it just keeps proving itself out over and over again. And I think that I don't think you're going to see the Cowboys spending big on a running back for a long time because they are a big-time organization. And if something doesn't work out, and they go against it, they won't go back that way for a long time. And so it's one of the reasons they don't spend money in free agency because it burned them, back in the early 2010, 2013. So, there has to be to a certain extent for sure.
And it's got to be, and I don't mean to go down a sunk cost fallacy here, but it's so hard because, you take Zeke Elliott, third or fourth in that draft? What am I going to do? Am I going to not pay him? Then what's the point of drafting a guy that high? I mean, I got to do something there. Going to the offensive line, you just mentioned Zach Martin, Tyron Smith, Lyle Collins. They just restructured their contracts here. What's that going to do for this offense? Can this team get back to, the NFC East makes it look easy, but can this team make a playoff run again with a healthy Dak Prescott then in 2021 with these restructured contracts being able to add some zest back to this team?
Yeah, absolutely. They were pretty much a dumpster fire from the minute that he went down in week 5 against the Giants. And they were in the NFC East hunt throughout all the way down to week 16. So, yeah, with Dak Prescott back and those offensive linemen back, even if you didn't improve the defense, they should be expected to win the NFC East. But I think the defense will be better just because hiring Dan Quinn as defensive coordinator is I think that's a great move. The majority of the players on this roster on defense were drafted because of what they can do in a 4-3 scheme, and that's really the style that Dan Quinn's bringing, more of what they were doing under Rod Marinelli in the previous years. So the switch to Mike Nolan and doing more 3-4 looks and being more multiple didn't make a lot of sense to me. And then it obviously was a disaster because of the pandemic. It was hard to implement all that stuff. And frankly, they just didn't have the talent to do that. So going back to a 4-3, I think is going to be huge for them. But then they also, coming off of a bad year like that, you get a top 10 pick and they have 4 picks now in the top 100. I expect at least 3 of those to be spent on defense. That should go a long way in helping this defense be at least middle of the pack, and that's what you have to be hoping for. They should never have been as bad as they were last year. I mean, that's one of the worst, if not the worst, defenses in Cowboys franchise history. Mm-hmm. That never should happen. The personnel is not great, but it's not that bad. So, to answer your question, they are very fortunate to be playing in the worst division in football.
It's March, but what the hell I'm going to ask you is, Mike McCarthy safe for all of 2021?
Yeah, he's safe for all of 2021. It would have to be – I really think, to be honest with you, I feel very confident he'll be back for even 2022. The only way he wouldn't be back for 2022 is if this season was just an epic disaster. Like last year, there's just a lot of things that he can, say, the pandemic, all the injuries they had, you lose your franchise quarterback in week 5. But that's 6-10. This year has to be better than that. And I feel like with all those pieces back, odds are you're not going to have that many rash of injuries to key spots. So I would think at least they get to 8-8 on even a year where it's really bad. So if that's the case, I don't think they would get rid of him after that year. So I think he's got at least 2 years left. But if they don't get to the playoffs, in the next 2 years and not only get to the playoffs, but like make a playoff run, then yeah, they could be looking in another direction, because that's the whole thing. Like, that's why I knew the Cowboys were never, like, going into this whole Dak discussion after the season ended, I was very confident they weren't going to be looking to draft the quarterback in the first round, because that's just not what Jerry Jones wants to win another Super Bowl. He's 78 years old. That's why he hired Mike McCarthy, and the only other coach they interviewed was Marvin Lewis, because they didn't have time for some rebuild. They don't want to do that. So if they never signed Dak, they were going more like the Tom Brady, Matthew Stafford type route, like there, to get a veteran. And so because of that, the bar is pretty high for Mike McCarthy, especially now you got Dak back. They're not expected just to make the playoffs. They got to be making playoff runs, and that's what he was brought in here for.
What startles me, though, about it, and I don't mean to go down a weird, morbid road, because you just hit it, and I only have like a minute left here, John. It scares me because I know that Jerry Jones wants to get one more in. He's 78, but when you have that much power, or you have the power over the organization, it's like, man, you're hurting your own cause, it seems. Ugh. It just bothers me.
No, I mean, this is the thing. As long as Jerry Jones is alive, he's going to be calling all the shots with the Cowboys. That's just how it's going to be. And, you know, it could be bad for the team. It could be good for the team. Maybe he goes all in on some stuff that maybe another GM wouldn't do. But, yeah, I mean, that's just how it's going to be with the Cowboys. It's always going to be different just because their owner is also their general manager. And so I expect him to be pushing all the chips in for the next 2 years to try to get another Super Bowl for himself. And so, but again, it's been 25 years. So it's like, it's not like he hasn't been trying these previous 25 years and it hasn't worked. So it remains to be seen.
John, we thank you very much for the time, my friend. All the best.
Same to you. Thanks for having me on.
John Machado joining us. Cowboys reporter for The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter at John Machado. 855-212-4CBS. It's a weird thing you got to bring up about Jerry Jones, because, yeah, he's tried. And if you're going to be – because I think he's made a ton of bad decisions that has put his team behind the eight ball. And I also think part of that is done because he knows that Jerry Jones – is a wealthy man. He can live till he's 100. But he's 78. And when you get to your 70s, when you get to your late 70s, you know that no matter what, there's a possibility you could be in the twilight. And you want to get that one as your own general manager if you're Jerry Jones. He's a proud guy. And I always will say, it could be worse for Cowboys fans. I know that there's Cowboys fans that every so often they split. Jerry Jones is a likable owner, but they split on him. Oh, it could always be worse. You could wield that type of power and be Mike Brown in Cincinnati. I'd still rather have Jerry Jones. I'd rather have Jerry Jones than a lot of actual trained general managers. 855-212-4CBS. Up next, speaking of, the worst job in sports. It's Ken Carmen on CBS Sports Radio.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. Get started at GoDaddy.com/arrow. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detecttheSOS.com today.